Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. I am TJ Jackson, and I'm here with both of my brothers, Terrell and Taj Jackson. How are you guys?
What's going on?
Taj, really the same exact thing?
Yes. Be consistent.
We are live here on the Power of Love Show. So if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on in our show, we will be opening up phone lines. We'll open up the phone lines where you can pose a question to either one of us or our special guests, which is today it's Jennifer White with the Hope After Project. Our phone number is 323-203-0815. If you want to call in, please do so. If you are too shy, embarrassed, scared, any other adjectives, guys?
Great. Intimidated.
You can always use Twitter. Or if you don't want to pick up the phone though. What if you're just laying in bed on the computer and you want to tweet it? No big deal. Our Twitter handle is @DDJFoundation. @DDJFoundation. And because my brothers won't read the disclaimer, I'm going to. We are not licensed therapists. We're just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it and we've learned from it. And we want to share our opinions and attempt to help you overcome whatever it is you're going through. Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Do not just rely on us. Terrell Jackson.
What's going on?
How was your week?
It was full. It was a full weekend. I feel like I did a lot.
So that's great. What did you do?
Well, I had tryouts.
Okay.
Baseball season starting again.
Okay.
And that was quite long. I think Saturday was a couple hours. For 11-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
and then the next day was 10-year-olds, and that was seven, eight hours.
Okay.
Tryouts,
mm-hmm.
which was
long.
Yeah, and it was right during football games, so I missed all that. But I think also it was Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
On
Very
Monday.
Special day.
Yes, it was. But besides that, I think one of the highlights for me was, I look at Bryce and Adrian, and they're obviously getting bigger, especially Bryce, because
mm-hmm.
he's getting to he's grown a lot, and it saddens me because they're growing so fast.
Yeah.
But this weekend I did something with him that I felt was one of those things where you couldn't do when he was younger, but you take advantage of now that he's older. And I told you, like I said, I was doing this couch to 5K thing,
yeah.
where it's a program. It's an app, but basically it's supposed to get you from being a couch potato to a runner. And on this day, I asked Bryce if he wanted to go on the jog with me.
Oh,
it's
nice.
It's not too hard. You run because I'm in the beginning stages, so you run for a minute, then you walk for a minute, then you run for a minute and a half, whatever. So I asked him if he wanted to do it with me around the block, and if he doesn't like it, you can come back and I'll just continue my run. And he was down. And
he liked it.
About
right?
three quarters of the way, I had to slow him down because I was struggling.
So you were the one struggling.
I was the one, yeah. And then a few days later, he wanted to run again. So
That's cool.
I did that a couple times. So that was nice.
Yeah, I would. My advice: take him once a week. Don't let him get burned out of it.
No,
but you're gonna.
I mean,
you're gonna need him.
I know.
You're gonna need him.
The best workout. Later.
The best workout energy. Partner.
Taj, what about you, bud?
Gosh, I spent most of my. I mean, I'm in my retro phase again.
What does that mean?
That's when you start being nostalgic and you start like watching old stuff and like watching old movies and listening to old music. I'm not at that phase again.
But don't you always do that?
I'm pretty much always in that phase. But this one, I alternate. Like I go from music to movies and all that stuff. But now I'm starting with video games again. So.
Is this with your arcade?
Yeah.
Does that mean you're playing old video games again?
Playing old video games, Super Mario, Legend of Zelda.
Is this on the Nintendo thing or is this on your big arcade?
The big arcade one. But I also do have the Nintendo one.
Okay, so Taj, for those, I know your age, but any new listeners, you're in your mid-40s,
yeah,
and you're playing Super Mario?
Yeah.
Explain that, the philosophy.
Oh, I don't know. For me, I love, you know, just connects me to my past. I'm very, you know, a lot of people want to forget the past, but for me, it kind of made me who I am, even with the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. And so I always embrace the past, and I think that, I don't know, I think...
So it's good for you.
It's good for you. I mean, things are going retro anyway now. I mean, the whole society is going retro.
Okay.
It really
That's
is.
True. As for my week, you know, I was telling Jennifer before you guys came in, this is the first year I've done something kind of different. Normally, my resolutions are... I'm very goal-centric in January to mm-hmm. start the new year, and it's usually from an action perspective, getting something done, doing something. This year has been the first year I've actually, and I didn't plan this, it's just happened, I've been kind of reserved action-based. So basically, I've been more chill. I've been reading more, I've been doing more yoga, and I haven't really made any action goals, you know, and it's actually been really healthy for me. And I think one of the things why it's been so good is because as I'm reading more and more, you got to take care of yourself and grow yourself before you can accomplish anything worthy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So without really planning it, that's what I'm doing. I'm taking the month of January, maybe a bit of February, but I'm going to take the month of January really just to empower myself, relax, restart before I go crazy on my goals.
Interesting.
That's good. That's all right.
Yeah, so it's been good. So... I strongly advise it. My first time ever doing that. You know, I'm sleeping a lot. I'm just chilling.
So you're taking a chill pill.
I'm taking a chill pill. It's great, though. Okay, I think that rounds up our weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Anything else you guys want to share?
I'm writing a script, but, yeah, comedy. But I don't have anything to share about it right now. But I just remembered. You asked what I was doing. I'm like, I was doing more this week.
Talking about scripts, I saw Shape of Water.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, very good movie. But he's consistent.
Yeah. You know what I like, too? At the end of the movie, I saw it at Arclight, and they had a little little short clip of the director.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he had a great, great quote. And I'm trying to find it, but I know I'm not right now, unfortunately, although I need to. But he said something that was really, really strong. He basically said, and I changed it, but I found it. He said, don't make the movie that needs to be made. Make the movie that needs you to be made.
Mm.
I thought that was really strong.
I like that.
Because it's such a different movie, and it's like he, instead of
only
looking
person,
for the movie that needs to be made, he's looking for the movie that needs him. And the way he is and his personality. So I kind of changed it for me for music and other things. But I thought it was really powerful. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's a good movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Without further ado, we are going to introduce our guest. Miss Jennifer White is the founder of Hope After Project. She founded it in 2013. In 2011, Jennifer was just 23 years old. And her life changed forever when her mother... Joni died by suicide. Jennifer noticed almost all the resources available to her focused on the way her mother died rather than the way she lived. And I assume that helped create and spark your Hope After... Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your Hope After Project.
Yeah.
Before we get into Hope After Project, I want to know more about you.
Yeah.
As you know, my brothers and I, we lost our mothers as late teens, early 20s, similar age to you, in a different way, in another tough way to lose a loved one, a parent. My first question to you was, tell me about like your youth, your childhood.
Yeah, so I'm not from... I live in L.A. now, but I actually grew up in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were divorced when I was very young, so my family really was my mom and my older brother, Andy, and me. And my mom was a nurse, and she was one of those people that just would do anything for anybody. I mean, she made sure her friends always had a place to go for the holidays. She was involved with her patients. She would go visit them in the hospital when she wasn't working. Mm. Things like that, you know, just above and beyond. And really instilled that in my brother and I from a very young age to be of service and to be kind and to be a good friend.
Mm.
And you know, it was funny at her at her funeral. We actually talked a lot about how she was a much better friend to other people than she was to herself.
Wow.
And she actually spent so much time caring for others that sometimes her self-care got a little bit lost in the mix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's important to take care of yourself.
It's so important.
Yeah.
So important.
So this was only 6 years ago. 7 years ago.
Yeah, so it'll be 7 years this coming year that she died. And she struggled before her death. She was an alcoholic, and she struggled with depression and anxiety for many years. But she was really incredible. She always would come back. I mean, she saw some of the lowest lows that a human being can see. And she would just kind of reemerge, and it was incredible. And so then when she didn't, it was really shocking that she hadn't kind of rallied through again.
Yeah.
Almost like somebody with terminal cancer that you keep, you go, wow, how are they still going?
Yeah.
She was that way, except for with a mental disorder.
Now, when your mother passed, was it, I know there was a grieving period. Was it something that was really difficult for you to get through? And I know you're still going through it. But is it something, for those who haven't lost or is in the process, tell me about your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I was 23 years old. I was at this point where my life was really just beginning. You know, you're 23, I just graduated from college, I was starting my career. It's such an enthusiastic time in your life where you really kind of feel invincible. And then to have my world shattered was so dysregulating. And it really took me some time to figure out what I wanted to do, who I was going to be in the wake of this happening. And I actually ended up changing careers, and I changed really my whole outlook on life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the two most profound things that have happened to me have been losing my mom and becoming a mom. And motherhood has really defined my life in a huge way.
When did you become a mother?
I have an almost 2-year-old.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have
any questions? I have a question.
Yeah.
How old was your mother when she passed?
She was 56.
56. And when she passed, where was your support coming from?
My support?
Mm-hmm.
Really just my brother and me. I mean, we're best friends, and we got through it together. Luckily, we both were, I guess he was married already at the time. I was dating my now husband. And we both have been so fortunate to marry into families that have just almost adopted us and treat us, you know, like their own. And
that's
they
great.
Really served as a great support system. And then I got really involved in the suicide prevention community almost right away.
How did you find out about that? What was your steps to get involved?
Gosh, you know, I joined a support group right away.
That's the one in Glendale.
Yeah, I went to the wonderful suicide support group that's still going on today at Glendale Adventist Hospital.
Wow, that's where two of my kids were born.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful program. And I think I went 3 weeks after my mom died, or 4 weeks after. I mean, those days that I don't even really remember.
Mm-hmm. Did someone recommend you to do that?
I think probably Google.
Wow. Yeah.
I think I found it on my own.
Yeah.
And I just walked in, and some of the people that were in that support group are still some of my closest friends.
Yeah.
And it really changed my world. I mean, just the support that I got there, and I didn't know anybody else that had ever lost somebody to suicide. I had never met somebody else, let alone a mom. And it was so wonderful to be in a group of people. It's like I always say, it's a club you never want to join, but thank God the club exists.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've learned that over the last couple of years, the importance of finding a community, to the importance of feeling that you're not alone, that you are part of a group. And we urge all our listeners to always to be part of a group. You're not the only one going through whatever it is you're going through. And if you can align yourself with other people and other groups that are going through it, your road to recovery will be a lot easier. The pain will never go away. It's been 20 years for us, a little over 20 years, and we still struggle with it, as you will have and will and will learn. But it never goes away. But at the same time, I think just being able to speak about it and to help and you know, do something good makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it's finding ways to learn with it.
Yeah.
To live with it, you know, to incorporate it into your life in a way that's positive if you can.
That's great. So one more time, the group that you went to was the suicide.
Yeah, it was called, I think it was called Survivors of Suicide or Survivors of Suicide Support Group, but it's at Glendale Adventist.
Beautiful. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple more. Sorry. When did you move out here?
I moved out here in 2006.
In 2006?
Yeah.
Okay, so at the time, was your mother still in Kansas City?
Or? She was, yeah. So she was living in Kansas City at the time of her death. So I flew, of course, as soon as I heard, as soon mm-hmm. as I got the phone call from my brother, I was on a plane.
And your brother as well was in Kansas City?
My brother lives in Kansas City. Got my whole family, really. Yeah.
And do you have a big family? Or?
I do, yeah, actually. Both my parents got married a couple more times. Okay. So I've accumulated a lot of... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've accumulated a lot of siblings over the years and have some really great step-parents. And my dad's still living. He's in Vegas. And, yeah, my family's a little bit unconventional, but... beautiful in its own way.
Yeah, great.
I have a question. You, before we get on to Hope After Project,
yeah.
I'm going through your website yeah. on my phone, so it's not the most productive way to do it. But there's a quote you say, I think it's from October 2014. You said, "Today was the first day in a really, really long time that when I thought of my mom, I just thought of her, the person she was, instead of thinking about how she died."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's been a big part of my journey in starting Hope After Project is that I just noticed so many of the resources were focused on my mom's final act, which was her suicide. And although it's really important, and I'm a huge supporter of suicide prevention and awareness, there was so much more to her. And I noticed, like, so many people, when they heard that my mom had died, only asked me about that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about how she lived,
yeah.
not those last horrible few hours.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's so interesting. In your own mind, was your recollection when you thought about your mom mostly the stuff of joyous times, or was it more?
It's complicated. I mean, we had a very, I would say, a difficult relationship, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just because I did at some point kind of become more of the caretaker in the relationship because she was struggling so much. But it's interesting. I always think that even though her life handed me some of my greatest challenges, she also is the person solely responsible for giving me all of the tools I needed to get through those things.
Yeah.
So it's a little complicated.
Yeah.
Terrell? No, I'm just curious. I'm sorry if I'm asking something I shouldn't, but
no.
How was your relationship with your father during these times and even before?
Yeah, so my dad's a great guy. He's a surgeon and in Vegas, and he was very busy with work when I was growing up and didn't, you know, spend a ton of time with him, but he's been very supportive of my brother and I's endeavors into suicide prevention and awareness. And one of the great things is because he does work in a hospital, he's actually been able to take some of this information and pass it on and
yeah.
really has kind of become an advocate for mental health awareness, you know, within his workplace too, which
yeah.
has been really great because there's such a lack of education in mm. our emergency rooms. And
yeah, I mean, just this morning I heard about a sophomore in college who would be probably 20, 21 years old at Washington State University, starting quarterback, committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about that, Terrell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just committed suicide, and everyone, I mean, it's still early, obviously, but everyone said he was happy, everything seemed fine, he was a good kid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things that, you know, mental health is something that needs to come to the forefront and not be judged so harshly.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we don't judge people if they have diabetes or if
yeah.
they have cancer, but if you say that you have chronic ongoing depression, people say, well, why don't you just go for a job?
Yeah.
And, you know, they said those things to my mom.
Yeah.
I said, Mom, why can't you just, you know, snap out of it? Why can't you just, you know, look, Mom, it's a beautiful world. You know, it's okay. But she was in real pain. She was experiencing real pain.
Yeah.
And we have to find a way to be more empathetic to
yeah.
that.
Very well. Okay. So before I get again to Hope After Project, you said you entered a bereavement group mm-hmm. in Glendale.
Yeah.
And then you became a certified bereavement counselor?
Yeah, so actually I ended up doing that. It's kind of a funny story, but my husband and I moved to Toronto for a year.
Why was that?
For his job.
Okay, I was about to say,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was such a fun experience.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, well, what am I going to do up here? So I got involved with a really great bereavement organization up there, and I did my bereavement group facilitating training with them. So basically, I'm certified to do peer-based grief facilitating. So it's, you know, kind of your traditional support group setting where it's a group of peers talking about our shared experience, and I'm able to facilitate and guide those conversations.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So you'll do you practice this? I know you do some of that in a way with your Hope After project, but mm-hmm. do you practice it like on a one-on-one basis at all, or?
No, not right now, although I am currently getting my master's in clinical psychology.
Good.
So that will happen. But no, right now it's mostly just used when I'm doing Hope After projects, and then I've volunteered with different organizations to provide that service as well.
And what were some of the things you've learned in your journey to becoming certified bereavement facilitator?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is just to listen. You know, I'm a talker, I'm a friendly person. Like, it's, you know, it's so hard for me sometimes to just realize that some people don't have anybody else that they can talk about this stuff with. And so to just sit and be there with somebody and to say to them, you can let it all out here with me, I can hold it, it's okay. And to just sit there, even in silence with them, can be really life-changing for people. I know it was for me.
Yeah. And then have you had those conversations with anyone?
You mean with?
Yeah, just in general, mm-hmm. like where you could say, where you've said to them, you can let it out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's even at our Hope After projects, just to be able to say to people, this is a safe place where you can talk about whatever is going on. And nobody here is going to tell you that it's too much or, oh, that's so sad. Can't you just cheer up? We are just here to listen and support you.
What's the best thing to do with somebody that isn't ready or willing to open up and talk?
I mean, I think that everybody's grief journey takes place in its own time. I mean, I'll never forget, I think I was still a member of the grief group, not facilitating, but a woman came in and she had lost her sister to suicide 10 years ago. And she really was, as far as a grief like development perspective, in the same place that some people that their loss had been 2 or 3 weeks ago, because she just had not dealt with it. She just said, nope, not going to go there, shut it down. And it didn't start for her until 10 years later. So you can't force somebody, you know, it's everybody's going to get there in their own time and in their own way. And I think all you can do if you're a friend of somebody who's lost someone or a spouse is to just say, I'm here, I'm ready. What I say to people now, if I know of somebody that's, you know, recently lost someone, is I just say, I want to be your red telephone on your desk. It never expires. The offer is always there that when you are ready to talk, you can call me. You don't That's have nice. To say like, oh, I know it's been 6 months and whatever. I'm just there. That's it.
That's great.
You know? That is great.
Red telephone.
Red telephone on the end of your desk, yeah.
Cool. Is that like an image from a movie?
Well, you know, like the president
Are you
has
kidding
one
me?
Of those.
I'm yeah. not. Is that something else? Terrell, you don't act like you do either.
No. I can figure it out, though.
You know, like the CEO. Yeah, like, oh, like we got to get the big guys in here.
I'm sorry for my brother's lack of knowledge.
Hey, that was too young. Hey man, I got to ask questions yeah, for all okay, our foreign okay. listeners, okay? Okay, talk to me about the Hope After Project. So you're coming off the passing of your mother.
Yeah.
You're coming off the bereavement group. Mm-hmm. You're coming off your year in Toronto where you yeah. did the bereavement
yeah.
certification.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
So I just started noticing how many people were saying to me, oh, yeah, you know, I understand. You know, my brother died too, and I've been wanting to do something in memory of him, like maybe do a 5K or maybe, you know, set up a scholarship fund or get a bench in a park, but I just don't know how. And I noticed how many people were saying this, like that so many people had this impulse to make the world a better place in response to loss. And I thought, huh, I wonder if I could help people with that. It's just kind of my personality. So I just kind of started an experiment where I started volunteering in memory of my mom. It was something that she and I had done together. It was something that she instilled in me. It was one of her core values. And I wondered if it would make me feel more connected to her. And it turned out it did.
That's great.
And I was able to focus on the positive things about her instead of all of the darkness and sadness that really, you know, emerged in her and I's life together.
That's beautiful. So when you do, so let me get this straight. I lose a friend, a relative, even an animal?
We don't do animals. Okay. Yeah. But I'll okay. refer you.
Okay. So I lose a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do something in his honor with a bunch of other friends and family yeah. members. I could reach out to you.
That's right.
And you'd probably ask me what kind of things yeah. are you thinking of?
Yeah, so we just start brainstorming. I mean, every conversation is, it starts with, you know, just tell me about your friend.
Yeah.
And for some people, even that is just incredibly therapeutic. But yeah. So they tell me about their friend, you know, and from there, I start brainstorming about different organizations that we could partner up with mm. to give you a volunteering community service memorial. So we've done all kinds of things. We've gone to animal shelters. We've served food to the homeless. We've we did a really cool one at like a safari reserve animal park where we were feeding giraffes and oh, planting wow. wildflowers. And we end up doing a lot of weeding. Wherever we go, they're like, oh, 35 really energetic volunteers. We've got this whole thing of weeds out back that we could get to. So we do a lot of weeding. We do a lot of gardening.
But that's all so therapeutic.
It's mm-hmm. so and therapeutic. It's,
that's
yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah, and it's all based on how the person lived their life. So, you know, maybe they were a teacher. We go volunteer at an after-school program for kids. Or maybe they loved cats. We'll go volunteer and clean litter boxes for 3 hours, you know.
I love it. So you just help help them get there.
I help them get there. I help them fundraise to make it happen. And I can even offer my services where I will go and help facilitate the day. So I'll make sure that we're actually talking about grief and loss. And then we still do the fun things, and we take pictures, and we're right. cutting down branches and all that stuff. But, you know, I help make sure that the person's name is said a lot, that right. we're talking about, you know, any issues.
Why is that important?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure you guys know from losing your mom, mm-hmm. people are so afraid to say the names of people that have died
mm.
as if it's going to remind you that your mom died. It's like, I don't forget that for a second. Yeah. It pulses through me, you know, as sure as anything. And yeah. it's comforting to hear, my mom's name was Joni. You know, it's just comforting.
That's to me, it says a lot about you, though. I feel that just shows how strong you are and how well your path to recovery has been. I'm going to ask you, Terrell, do you feel that way?
As far as what?
Like if when someone said mom and name and stuff, did it immediately take you to a really great place?
I think it depends. It depends on my situation.
On you.
Yeah, it depends on my situation.
Would you say that...
Or the environment, or who's even bringing up the person.
Even 10 years... Because I feel we're all much better than we were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But even 10 years ago, would you say that same thing?
I feel that I'm in a better place of understanding.
Yeah.
You know, but I think just recently I was in a conversation with someone and they were speaking about abuse and things, and they mentioned mom,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't... make me so happy, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you talk about something with baseball where you know, God, your mother was always giving and arranging and helping,
yeah,
puts a smile on your face. So I think it depends on how it's brought up. But I think I'm in a completely different place where I was before, where either one of those, it probably would take me to a place of sadness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very much. Thanks for the explanation. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're here with Jennifer White from the Hope After Project. If you have any questions for her or even my two brothers and myself, you can call us at 323-203-0815. I am now going to start taking phone calls. I usually ignore the first, and there's been a couple, so I apologize to any callers. But you can call in, and I'll answer. Now, when you do a project,
mm-hmm.
you mentioned this. You just do it for one day. You won't open it up to a continuous thing, or how?
That's right. So we're only involved for one day.
Okay.
So let's say, you know, your friend, we want to memorialize him, and we end up, you know, volunteering with a homeless shelter, and we go and we serve food one afternoon. So that's where Hope After Project has been involved, but many of our recipients then continue that relationship. So there's nothing to prevent you from going back and becoming a regular volunteer for them. So that's how it really benefits the organizations that we partner with, is we're giving them access to a whole new volunteer base.
Have any of them launched into like foundations at all?
Or not that I know of, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. that's going to feel really good. When you know that has happened.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions, and I'm sorry if I keep going back to a certain area.
That's fine.
When your mother passed,
yeah.
did you feel any guilt or anything like that? Because I know you said your relationship with her was difficult, or I forget the exact same word you used. Yeah. Was there any guilt? And how did you, I'm curious about the transition mm-hmm. of it, because there was, in my experiences with passings, be it my mother or even my uncle, or we just recently lost a friend, I've noticed there's guilt in there. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not justified, there's just guilt creeps in, because you always feel like you could have done more, you should have done more, mm-hmm. whether, you know, as a friend or a nephew or something. I'm just curious if you experienced that.
Of course. Of course I did. I felt like if only I would have known, if only I could have picked up on some sort of something in her voice when we talked that night, because we did, and she sounded fine. And there were lots of nights where I hung up the phone with my mom and I wasn't sure she was going to be alive the next day. And that night was not one of them. Mm. She sounded fine. Mm. And that's actually pretty common with people that are really at risk, is that they might actually experience an elevation in mood because they're saying goodbye. And that was what happened with my mom for sure.
Wait, can you say that again?
Yeah, it's not uncommon for people that are at risk to suicide mm-hmm. to actually experience an elevation in mood.
Right.
So my mom knew prior. So my mom knew she was going to die that night. She knew. She knew she was going to do a really serious attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my perception is that she was saying goodbye to me and she wanted it to be a positive conversation. She didn't say anything like cryptic or,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
but she was fine. And I went out to dinner with friends. I didn't think anything of it. And so, of course, I have felt guilty and I've had to process that. I have a wonderful therapist who I work with, which I recommend to everyone.
Mm.
And going to that support group. And honestly, Hope After Project in many ways was born out of those initial really raw feelings of, I wish I could have done something, and so I'm going to do something now.
How long did it take you until you did something, be it therapy or join a support group? How long would you say?
I think I walked into my first support group like maybe 3 weeks to a month after when my mom died. Like, I went very early on because I knew I was dealing with a huge issue. I just knew if I didn't go in right away, I was never going
to
go.
To me, that's very mature. Mm-hmm. Because you were 20.
I was 23.
That's very strong and mature of you to not have someone push you there and for you to Google or whatever you did to get there. I think that's huge. And a second part of that maturity is the fact that you did it. And that you didn't do it without skepticism. You didn't do it like, I'm supposed to, so I'm here. It seems like you did it properly, you know? And I commend you for that, because a lot of people, when they pass, they don't want to do it that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, again, I'm sorry, caller. But I commend you for that.
Well,
I think
you.
That's something that's not as rare as, or it's rare, and I wish it was more unrare. That people would accept that counseling, accept that they don't know everything. They need help. I think
a lot
of times...
Honestly, I was just lucky. Like, that's just my coping mechanism. My coping mechanism is I attack things. I'm like, here's the problem. What do we do to get through it? Like, okay, you lost your mom to suicide. You join a suicide support group. That's what you do. I am just... I mean, maybe there's something in my spirit, you know, probably that I got from my mom that's just resilient. But I also am just really fortunate that my coping mechanism led me to really positive resources. But there's nothing, you know, wrong with people that doesn't happen right away for them. And that's part of, you know, Hope After Project, is I wanted to create another resource for people that maybe don't get there as naturally.
You know, Jennifer, my thought is there's nothing wrong, but I think there's something to so much to be gained when you can actively somehow handle it.
Yeah.
Whether it's in an bereavement group, whether it's in a community group, whether it's doing actions mm-hmm. to honor that person.
Yeah.
I think that obviously the most dangerous thing is to do nothing, but that's only half the thing. Like you said earlier in the show, is the person who's recovering has to be invested into doing something.
Yeah, that's right.
Because if they're forced to do it, it'll just be a turnoff and can even deter them longer to even actually getting there. But getting there is huge.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you for calling the Power of Love Show. Who's on the line with us?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Harsha from the Netherlands.
How are you?
Hello.
I'm okay.
Thank you for calling in. What do you have for us today?
I want to thank you all for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You are doing great support for all of us.
Thank you.
And I'm just a little bit nervous.
You're That's doing okay. fine. You're doing fine.
No need to be nervous.
Yes, I have lost my brother when I was 15.
Mm.
And another brother I lost when I was 25. And my English is not so so great.
Fine. It's better than our Dutch.
Yes.
So, but I didn't have a support group or something. So that's why I wanted to thank you all for all this.
Yeah.
What you are doing.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the phone call. Did you have a question before I answer you?
Yes. I didn't notice the name of your guest.
Jennifer.
Jennifer.
But she had lost her mother with suicide, and I was wondering if she was also thinking of suicide or not.
Oh, good question.
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. You know, I personally did not feel suicidal after my mom's death. I certainly had moments of wishing I would just get hit by a bus so I wouldn't have to go through it. But I think that your question brings up a really valid point, because many people do feel suicidal after losing a loved one to suicide. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, it puts an option on the table that maybe you hadn't thought of before. But the best thing that I can recommend is just to not be ashamed of that feeling and to try to find a safe place to talk about it. You know, I don't know the resource in the Netherlands, unfortunately, but here in the U.S. it's 1-800-273-TALK, and that's a 24-hour suicide hotline.
Great.
Mm.
Wow.
I'm not going to even try to say your name, caller, but I want to thank
Harsha.
You. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to try. My brothers will ride me all day. But thank you for calling, and I think you had an awesome question, because that's a great, very good question.
Yeah. And continue
You're
to be
welcome.
Strong as yeah. well. Continue to be strong, mm-hmm. and we're here for you.
Yes, thank you.
All right, take
thank
care.
Love you.
Take care. I think that was a really good question.
It
I
is,
missed that question
yeah.
because I never thought of that,
mm-hmm.
you know? So
yeah.
that's a very honest, good question. Did you have any questions?
Yeah, I was just thinking similar to us. Our mother was, we woke up basically one night and our mom was gone.
Yeah.
And obviously you the same, you got a phone call and she was gone. It's losing somebody is terrible and it's difficult any way you look at it. But I feel like there's something different when it's sudden and mm-hmm. they're just taken from you
mm-hmm.
and you don't have that moment, you know, to say goodbye and, or you don't get that last chance, you
yeah.
know. I'm fortunate that, you know, I reached out and called my mom. I was playing the piano and I got up and I called her because I wanted a bagel
mm.
on the counter, and I asked her if I could have the bagel, and I'm fortunate I said I love you, you know,
yeah.
before, but that was my last conversation. Did I know that was my last conversation? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think my brothers had those conversations, you know, Taj mentioned before that his was a little bit different because he was tired and, you know, did you have anything like that where you struggled with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll always struggle with that a little bit. Just that feeling of not being able to say goodbye. I remember I had a fantasy for a long time, kind of one of those reoccurring thoughts, you know, that I just wish she had been put on life support. Like, even if she had to have died, like, if I couldn't change that outcome, if she had just been on life support, and then I could have gone to the hospital and said it to her. And it's such a weird thought.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't actually have made it any better.
Do you guys think that it's grief? I mean, grief. Guilt-driven? Because I've never felt that way. I never felt like... I never reminisced on the fact that I didn't get a last word with Mom. Mm. Maybe I always wish I could have a day with Mom, you know. You know, but I don't look back and say, I wish I would have done this.
I think... Well, there really isn't, it's not really closure. There's a poor analogy, but this is all I could come up with that on the spur of the moment. I feel like it's almost like a TV show, and you're in the middle of the series, and you just stop on episode 7 and don't get to 10.
Yeah.
And it just, you're just stuck. You don't get any more, you don't hear any more, you don't learn any more. That's just what it is, and you got it's canceled, it's gone, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Could be, I mean, it could be an age thing too, in terms of that, because we were older, and so maybe we thought we could change things more than TJ. You were a lot younger, so you might have thought, well, that
I
can
more
have
of a responsibility,
in terms of, because we were all hovering around the 20 area.
Well,
so it's like,
I mean, I think no matter what comes up for you, we're always like trying to come up with a different reality or a different ending to that TV show. It's like, well, but what if I hadn't stopped watching? Like, what would have happened, you know? And I think that it just takes some time for the brain to kind of learn, or maybe for the heart to learn, this is how it is, and it's okay. And even though it's awful, you're going to find a way to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Now, something, talking about going forward, something that's very interesting to me as a parent, and Terrell can relate to this, is, like I said, we lost our mother over 20 years ago, but the stages of grief continue.
Yes.
And for me, it's more now on a parent level that my kids don't have an amazing grandmother.
Right.
Do you experience that?
Totally. I mean, I knew there would be some sadness when I became a mom, but I did not expect, my grief totally like reemerged when I had my son. And, you know, to be, I think the experience of being, you know, a motherless mother, or, you know, a motherless father, is really profound. Like, I just felt like, you know, if my mom was alive, she would tell me what to do. I could get this baby to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just felt so related to her. And I think that there's a part of me that still isn't comprehending the fact that my son isn't going to meet her. It just doesn't make sense.
And you know, it's something that I still struggle with, and I don't think that my oldest is 17, 18, and it's something that never goes away.
Yeah,
you know,
it's an emptiness.
When you see your friends and their parents, even in the older age, enjoying each other, that's where it just hurts and it never goes away.
Yeah.
We have another phone call. Who's joining us on the Power of Love show?
Yeah, hello, guys. Hello, Jennifer. It's Toya calling in from France.
Hi, Toya. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you guys?
Good. Two international phone calls.
Yeah.
Beautiful. What do you got for us, Toya?
Yeah. I wanted to ask two questions to Jennifer, because I've watched couples of your videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I've seen you've achieved many projects, like planting flowers, painting schools, spending time with socializing kitties.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, what is the greatest hope after projects you've done?
Oh.
And my second question is, have you ever been asked to consider a hope after project in the memory of a teenager or a child that would have passed away?
Great questions. I definitely can't pick my favorite hope after project, but... you know, I always say, like, hope after project is my hope after project. I say that at all of my hope after projects, because the entire organization, for me, is what I hope to give people at their project. So for me, every time that I get, even just sitting here with you guys today in this room and learning a little bit about your mom, for me, I really take that as such a gift. Like, I've gotten to know all these people that have died that I never knew here in life through the memory of their loved ones. So they're, every project is really special to me because I get to learn about these people that are so special to others. And then as far as projects in memory of a child, of course, we, you know, will help anybody that...
Have you done any so far?
We have not done any for a child, although we have had lots of kids, lots of teenagers present at our Hope After projects.
Okay.
And we've actually recently spoken with somebody who wasn't quite ready to do a project yet, but in memory of a child actually that was stillborn. So, you know, we're open to any kind of loss. Anybody that needs support, we're there.
I think it's so great what you're doing,
Thank
too,
you.
Because I don't think people realize the power of doing action is, you know, and it's so commendable. Like, and I think, again, I almost try to speak for my brothers, but even doing the Dede Jackson Foundation, it's been the best therapy for us. You know, the action of doing things and helping others is so therapeutic and so beneficial. So, I strongly advise anyone who's dealing with the loss of a loved one to do something in their honor in an active way, because it's the best way to also, it's the best way to pay tribute, but it's also the best way, I think, to navigate through your grief.
Yeah. No, it's rechanneling all that energy into positive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the focus of what, I mean, that was the idea of why we did, why we're doing it, is to take that and make it better, make everyone better. I have a Twitter question.
Yeah.
That's why I started talking.
Look, Toria, thank you so much for your phone call
thank
and
you.
The questions. Great questions.
And thanks for calling.
You're
in
again, welcome. Toria.
Thank you.
And I really commend you for dedicating time to help those who are grieving to recover and to find hope.
Thank you.
I think it's really helpful. So thank you so much.
We agree.
Thank you, Toria.
We agree.
Take care. Go for it, Taj.
All right. Well, there's a couple. Gigi is blowing up the Twitter.
All right, Gigi.
Hi, Gigi.
Okay. Gigi, the first question is, have you thought about how you can explain to your child how your mother died if they ask at a young age?
Yeah. So great question. It's something that, you know, honestly, I've had a lot of anxiety about, and it's an open conversation that my husband and I have. And it's something that I have read about. It's something that I plan on talking to my therapist about. It's something that I plan on talking to my other friends who have lost parents that have kids about. But, you know, right now he's only almost two, and he mostly likes to talk about trucks.
Yeah.
but I already, the conversation has already started. You know, I point out pictures of my mom around the house. I, you know, talk about mommy's mommy. And, you know, I think that I'll just start by explaining it to him in a very age-appropriate way, but it absolutely will be an open conversation in our house, because I want him to know that if he is ever struggling, there's no reason why he can't come to me or to his dad or to his other grandparents, you know, that we're all there for him, and that what she did wasn't wrong. She didn't do anything bad. There's nothing for us to be ashamed of. She was in a lot of pain, and she was struggling, and that there's nothing wrong with that. So he will always know what happened in an age-appropriate way.
Mm-hmm. Great. And the second one, she says, with all due respect, in kindness, do you believe or have you learned whether or not, like, suicide is hereditary or that depression, that kind of...
Yeah, so we're learning a lot about that right now in the field. And, you know, there are different statistics, some of which point, you know, a little bit more towards it being, you know, genetic or hereditary. But a lot of that is kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, about how sometimes, you know, if a close loved one or even a friend, you know, dies by suicide, it tends to kind of put the idea out there or the option out there. It becomes a thought for somebody that maybe it wasn't a realistic option before. So really, I think that while we're kind of waiting on more definitive research, the best thing that we can do is spread awareness and really get in there when communities are affected, especially with kids, and make sure we go in right away and be educating and make sure that people have the resources to reach out if they need help.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Taj, Great question, Gigi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Gigi's one of those that's not too shy to call.
Oh.
So she was the one I was describing earlier that just, I don't feel like calling. I'm gonna tweet it.
Yeah. Giving me something to do. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks, Gigi. Keeping Taj on his toes. Okay. Well, we're pretty much out of time. We have 38, 37, 36 seconds, supposedly. But I want to give you the last 30 seconds or so to say whatever's on your mind, to spread whatever you want to the listeners.
Just mostly that I hope that anybody, whether you're struggling, you know, with suicidal thoughts or that you've lost somebody that you love, I just hope that you can get help. You know, I mentioned it earlier, but 1-800-273-TALK. You can also text 741-741. It's crisis text line if you need some help. I'd love to help you at Hope After Project, too, if you're at that phase in your grief journey. And I hope that you're surrounded by love and support and light on this journey. There's no one right way to get through it.
Awesome. That's wonderful.
There you have it, Jennifer White with the Hope After Project. If you want to learn more about Hope After Project, go to hopeafterproject.com. You can also on Facebook go to @HopeAfterProject. A lot of great resources. And again, it's something that we wouldn't have you here if we didn't commend you and believe in what you're doing. So if for anyone out there, especially in the LA or California area, if you want to do something memorial for your loved one, visit Hope After Project, where they're building communities, community service memorials.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to close out the show. Any last things, Taj, Terrell?
No,
this was great.
Yeah.
Always learn.
So always learn.
Me too.
Always learning. Thanks again, Jennifer, for joining.
Thank you, guys.
We will be back next Wednesday from 1 to 2. Have a wonderful rest of your week, everyone, and spread love.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.